Welcome to the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com.
Hello, and welcome to this week's edition of the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com. We go live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, checking on the world of golf to bring you the latest news, insights, analysis, interviews, recaps, previews. Hey, we cover anything and everything golf. My name is Carlos Torres. Every week, I'm alongside my co-host, Fred Alvader. Fred, hi, how are you this week?
Carlos, I am fantastic. Did you see they're getting 10 inches of snow out in Wyoming? But we are experiencing fantastic weather here in Toledo. Sunny, temperatures in the mid-70s, just perfect for golf. We had another great weekend of golf last week with two phenomenal young players, one on the PGA Tour in Malaysia and the other one on the LPGA Tour in China. The Champions Tour winds up their 2015 season this week when it hosts the Charles Schwab Cup Championship in Naples, and we're going to be talking Tiger, Jordan, and a high school sophomore that shot 56. A 56, Carlos. Let's go.
Let's go. And our VIG is going to be none other than Jay Townsend. You don't want to miss that. And also, our chip chat today, this week, is going to be taken by Matt Souderman. So anyway, we have a little bit later on the show. But we're going to start right away, like we usually do with our weekend backswing, when we recap the weekend's action. And let's start by the race to Dubai on their Tour, where, man, it looks like lifetime ago when Victor Dubuisson was battling Jason Day at the WGC match play last year. And, hey, he came back this year after struggling. He conjured a brilliant back nine to win the Turkish Airlines Open for the second time in three appearances and spark emotional scenes there at the Montgomery match play. Oh, he's 25-year-old. He chipped in for eagle at the 11th to get back in the hunt and then had three birdies in the last four holes, including the last two for a 6-under-65, stealing the title away from South African Jacobin Zil, who can only par the last for 67. Thailand's Kiriraj Afibarnrad, he took third place with Korean Byung Han fourth. You know, the expected challenge from world number one Rory McIlroy never materialized. Nevertheless, he finished with a T6, and he extended his lead at the top of the race to Dubai after my pick for the series second place, Danny Willett. He finished T11. You know, this was an emotional Dubuisson who spoke after his win. He talked about the frustrations he had this year and how big this win was for him after all the struggles. Fred, the European Tour now moves to Asia for the WGC HSBC Champions event in China.
Yeah, Dubuisson birdied three of the last four holes to edge out Jacob van Zyl and win in Turkey for the second time in 3 years. He collects a little over 1 million euro for the win, moves to number 7 in the race to Dubai and number 35 in the official world golf ranking. It's been a difficult year for the Frenchman, and he was quite emotional after his winning putt found the cup. He had just two top tens coming into this week and admitted he had lost confidence this year. In a post-round interview, Dubuisson said, "It's so hard because there were so many personal reasons why I didn't play that much this year. It's not because I didn't want to play. I was really counting on this final series to give me some confidence back because I completely lost it a few months ago. I was just missing everything. Sometimes you feel like your game is never going to come back, and this week I realized that my whole game was here. Then I settled down, and it was all about the putting." Jacob van Zyl held a one-shot lead standing on the 17th tee, but Dubuisson made birdies of both 17 and 18 versus van Zyl's two pars that left him just one shot behind. Kiriraj Afibarnrad had held the lead during the final day but finished two shots behind the winner, with Benny Ahn one more shot back at 19 under par. You mentioned Rory McIlroy. He had three consecutive 67s in the first three rounds but faltered with a final round 71 to finish T6. Good sign for the former number one, though, with three Race to Dubai events remaining. Wouldn't be surprised to see him win this week in China when the European Tour joins the PGA Tour for the WGC HSBC Champions, Carlos.
And talking about the PGA Tour, oh my God, Justin Thomas, he held off a blistering finish from Adam Scott to win the CIMB Classic that was played at the Kuala Lumpur Golf and Country Club in Malaysia. The first of what appears to be many PGA Tour titles for the 22-year-old American. You know, 20 players scored 20 under or better, and Thomas had to be at his very best when he was forced to recover from a potentially disastrous double bogey and his 14th hole to birdie three of his final four holes to hold out Scott. You know, that's good news for Adam Scott, whose bogey-free round of 63 gave further evidence of his capacity to handle the switch to the short putter. This finish and his fourth place earlier in the WGC Cadillac providing a boost in his ability to make the transition on a regular basis in this season. Scott, who has Steve Williams back in the bag, actually joined the lead with Kevin Na and Justin Thomas when he birdied the 14th, but was unable to hold off the powerful finishing burst of the winner. Two people are playing great at the start of the year, and I have to mention them. It's Brendan Steele and Kevin Na, who tied for third position, behind one shot behind Scott. Fred, three tournaments into this new PGA Tour season, three recent graduates from the Web.com Tour have won two this year, and Thomas, who was almost rookie of the year last season, an alumni from last season, nailed this one.
Yeah, the slogan is, these guys are good, but these young guys are really getting better quick. Another 20-something, 22-year-old Justin Thomas, got his first win at the CIMB in Malaysia. Since winning on the web.com in 2014 and earning his 2015 PGA Tour card, Thomas has been playing at a very high level. He had a great year, seven top tens in 30 starts, earned over $2 million and finished number 32 in the FedEx Cup. With a third at the fries.com and this one in the CIMB, he's already at $1.5 million for this year and takes the early deal in the FedEx Cup. Adam Scott, you mentioned him, posted a 63 on Sunday to finish just one shot back behind Thomas. Kevin Na, another strong week, 67, 66, 64, 67, still not good enough to win. Two runners up and a T3 and three starts in this wraparound season. He is on fire. Hideki Matsuyama is off to a strong start in 2016, finished in fifth spot. As you mentioned, PGA Tour moves farther east to Shanghai for the WGC HSBC Champions, where the HSBC announced today the renewal of its commitment to international golf. It will continue to sponsor the World Golf Championships, HSBC Champions, the HSBC Women's Champions, and the Abu Dhabi HSBC Golf Championship. They announced earlier this summer that the bank would continue as patron of the Open Championship. So HSBC is staying in the golf game, Carlos.
And talking about the Far Asia, you know, the LPGA Tour rookie Se-Yeon Kim has won her third title and confirmed her status as the Rookie of the Year with a one-shot victory at the Blue Bay LPGA event on Hainan Island off the coast of South China. She's a diminutive but powerful 22-year-old. She has recorded also two top fives in major championships this season. So her arrival on the LPGA Tour after five wins on the Korean LPGA Tour has been nothing short of spectacular. Kim birdied the final hole to defeat American Stacey Lewis and Kim Kaufman and Chinese Taipei's Candy Kong. That quartet was the only players to finish under par during a week where blustery conditions made that the already demanding layout even more so. Imagine this, the fifth place players were four shots behind the runner-up finishers, all over par. And believe it or not, Lydia Cope, she gave the other players a break this week so they could win, and she still finished anyway a top 10 T8. So, Fred, as the tour moves this week to Japan for the Total Japan Classic, I think there's no doubt who the Rookie of the Year in the LPGA is going to be.
Yeah, while 22-year-old Justin Thomas was winning on the PGA Tour, another 22-year-old, Se-Yeon Kim, held off Stacey Lewis, rookie Kim Kaufman, and Candy Kong to win by a single stroke and pocket the $300,000 first-place check at the Blue Bay LPGA on Hainan Island in China. As you mentioned, they were only women to finish under par on the difficult golf course. Lydia Ko finished T8 at plus four for the week. In addition to 10 top tens, this was Kim's third win this season. She won the Pure Silk in the Bahamas in February, the Lotte Championship in Hawaii in April. She's up to number 7 in the world and number 4 in the race to the CME Globe and has won over $1.7 million this year. Not a bad year, Carlos. Why haven't we been talking about her? She's just having a great season, and she's done it very quietly. T4 at the Ana Inspiration, runner-up at the Women's PGA, and T11 at the Evian were her best finishes in the majors. Very consistent year for the young Korean. Here's another young lady knocking on the door of superstar status, Carlos. How do the Koreans do it? It's like they just cut these fantastic lady golfers out of a mold or something. Although Ko is recognized as a New Zealander, she was born in Korea also. The top of the women's game on the LPGA is getting mighty crowded. I've never seen a time when women's golf has such a group of top players all looking to dominate at the same time. Race to CME Globe is beginning to come down to the wire. After her win in Taiwan 2 weeks ago, 2014 million-dollar winner Lydia Ko has a commanding 969-point lead over NB Park and 1,500 points over Stacey Lewis. Will Ko win the big prize 2 years in a row? Only two events remain, Carlos. They wind up the Asian Swing in Japan and then head to Mexico for the Lorena Ochoa Invitational next week before they head to Naples, Florida for the CME Globe Championship November 19th through the 22nd.
I don't know. I think they have a secret factory there in Korea where they produce those young women playing golf. But we'll get some more news on it afterwards.
It is phenomenal. It is really amazing the success that they are having.
Yeah. Finally, on the Champions Tour, the regular season has drawn to a close with the completion of this past week's Toshiba Classic in California. And it was 53-year-old Dustin Waldorf who broke through for his first win on the Champions Tour after a PGA Tour career that had produced four titles. He won by 2 shots over Joe Durant, with Kevin Sutherland and another shot back in third position. In winning, Waldorf has played his way into this week's season-ending Charles Schwab Cup, finishing the regular season in 19th position and being one of the leading 30 players who head to Arizona. Fred, there, the big three will battle it out. Monty Cullen Montgomery is first with 3,078 points, followed by Jeff Maggard with 3,039, and Bernhard Langer with 3,012.
Yeah, Carlos, I was really surprised that this was Duffy Waldorf's first win on the Champions Tour. Seems like he's just really been playing well over the past three seasons, and I guess I just thought he had won before. He used a 60 in the second round on Saturday to take the lead, and then struggled a little bit at Sunday, but righted the ship and posted a fine round 66 to win by 2 shots over Joe Durant. My guy Paul Goitis had a good week in his home state. 15 under par, finished fourth. Freddie Couples played well all three rounds, 65, 65, 69, still left him T5. Jeff Maggart tied for 15th, Longer tied for 18th, and Colin Montgomery tied for 39th. All finished outside the top 10, did not earn any Charles Schwab Cup points this week. That's unusual for those three. They will head into the Charles Schwab Cup Championship with Monty leading Maggart by just 39 points and Langer only 66 points back. Marco Dawson is fourth, and he's nearly 1,700 points back. This is a three-horse race for the Charles Schwab Cup bonus this week in Desert Mountain in Scottsdale, Arizona, Carlos. Also, I want to mention here real quick, before I turn it back to you, the college East Lake Cup was played. It was the inaugural cup held at East Lake Country Club in Atlanta this week. Featured the four top men's and women's collegiate golf programs in the nation in match play format. One of the big stories of the tournament is the heavy rains that had fallen on Atlanta and delayed play. They did get the matches completed, and here are the results. In the men's bracket, Georgia beat LSU 4-1 in the first semifinal, and Illinois defeated USC 3-2 to make it to the finals. Today, in the finals, Illinois bested Georgia 3-2 to win the first East Lake Cup. For the women, Duke beat Stanford 4-1 in one semifinal, and the USC Lady Trojans defeated Baylor 3-2. And then in the finals, USC women beat the Dukies 4-1 to claim the title, Carlos.
And that will wrap up our week in Baxton. We're going to take our first short break. When we come back, we're going to have our Power 5 news presented by United Golf Network. Don't go away.
The Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Now, back to the show.
And now it's time for the Par 5 News presented by United Golf Network. We're going to have some news item for you. And Fred, you're going to have the tee shot. And it's going to be, hey, we haven't talked a lot about Tiger Woods lately, so let's talk about him. What do you have about him?
Yeah, Tiger has suffered yet another setback. He announced via his website last Friday he was forced to have a second surgery in just a little over 18 months. The first surgery was last year, then he had his second surgery on his back in less than a month. It was performed on Wednesday in Park City, Utah, by neurosurgeon Dr. Charles Rich. The doctor was quoted, "Tiger's doing well, and we expect him to make a full recovery." There's no timetable for Woods' return to the PGA Tour. He stated, "It's one of those things that had to be done. I have an outstanding team of doctors. I'll be back as soon as I can. My family and the fans' concern and support have helped a lot. I'll be back, and I'll be ready to compete." He is on total bed rest, will miss his final design visit Thursday at Blue Jack National, a Tiger Woods design golf course outside of Houston. "I'm extremely disappointed not going to Blue Jack, but I'm very excited about our grand opening in the spring." Woods is expected to attend and host the Hero World Challenge December 2nd through the 6th at Albany Club in the Bahamas, which benefits the Tiger Woods Foundation, but he won't be able to play. Also, Carlos, the Nashville Business Journal reported last week a golf course designed by Woods would anchor a massive development 30 miles south of Nashville. Dallas-based Beacon Land Development, the same company that Woods worked with on the Blue Jack project in Houston, is working on a 1,200-acre project near the town of Thompson Station. The project would feature a golf course designed by Woods, as well as custom homes, a music venue, and other features. Beacon Land Management, as I mentioned, this is a good news for Tiger's golf course development business, but bad news for his pursuit of Jack Nicklaus. Who knows, though, Carlos? Now with other things on his plate, kids, foundation, golf tournament management, and his design business, he may just relax, get healthy, and be ready to compete for another 6 or 7 years.
I think that record is now as far as the moon for him. So we'll see what happens, but hopefully wish him a full recovery and fast, speedy recovery. And talking about him, let's talk about his former caddy, Stevie Williams. You know, he has a new book called Out of the Rough. It came out yesterday, and in a few excerpts that were released on Sunday, he claims, and I quote, "I felt uneasy about bending down to pick up his discarded club. It was like I was his slave," end of quote. You know, this is what Williams was paid to do: carry Woods' bag and pick up his clubs, along with giving him distances and club suggestions, and he made millions of dollars doing just that. He was in Tiger's bag for 13 of his 14 major wins. Complaining about it and comparing it to slavery is just outlandish. Stevie, who was Woods' best man at his wedding, was fired in 2011, as was thought to be part of Tiger's inner circle. He also claims that he knew nothing about the affairs Woods was having. He's been doing this all over. According to Williams, he asked Woods' agent, Mark Steinberg, to release a statement that he had no idea what he was going on. But Steinberg refused because there were many people close to Woods claiming the same thing. But now that the book has been released, more player ripping has been revealed. You know, it turns out that angry Stevie Williams doesn't like a lot of golfers. He mentions Sergio Garcia about being loud, abusive, bad-tempered, and throwing clubs. Who, Sergio? No way, Stevie. Sorry about that one. You know, Vijay
Not
Singh.
Not your boy, Sergio.
No, Sergio, no way. Vijay Singh, that he has never fessed up to his 1985 cheating incident. Phil Mickelson, he says that he thinks that he knows everything and he lords over people. And Kevin Na, oh my God, he's complaining about his slow playing. Kevin Na, slow playing? Steve, come on. He said, "You're the most inconsiderate player I've ever met in my life," end of quote. So there you have it. Williams has problems with a lot of good and likable guys. If you'd like to read more about who angry Stevie Williams dislikes, you know, buy his book. But remember, during his career, in which he earned millions of dollars, specifically over $11 million alone while carrying Tiger Woods' golf bag. He felt like a slave. Fred led the uprising, the popular rage and picketing of Opens and Ryder Cup start. From this day forth, let the cry ring through, I am Stevie Williams. No, I am Stevie Williams. Caddies of the PGA Tour, throw off your shackles and cry freedom.
Yeah, Carlos, you know, I really debated about even putting this news item in here, but it is news, and I feel like we got to cover it. So it's going to be the only time I talk about this thing, all right? he rehashes a lot of old news. You know, no one made him stay with Tiger if he felt like a slave. I'm sure there were, like, 50 other golfers that would have loved to have had him on their bag, but he knew he could make a lot more money carrying Tigers. A lot of sour grapes here. Strictly a money grab for this book. I'm not for it in any way. I'd almost recommend that people not buy it. Don't give them the satisfaction of putting some dollars in the pocket. Hey, Carlos, let's talk just a minute about the LPGA. The tentative 2016 LPGA Tour schedule is out. Because of the Olympics, the last full field event of the year will be the Marathon Classic in July, halfway through the summer. It's going to be tough for young players to get enough events to make the limited field events at the end of the season and keep cards for 2017. The Olympics will be held August 17th through 20th in Brazil. There won't be a Solheim Cup next season, but the new international crown will pit the top eight golf countries of the world in a round-robin match play format July 21 through 24 outside of Chicago. So that takes another week. These two events have had a huge effect on some lesser LPGA tournaments. The 2016 Marathon Classic, for example, will be played July 14th through 17th, the week immediately prior to the International Crown, and it's the last, I mentioned, last full field event before the Olympics. It will also be the last chance for the ladies to qualify for the Asian Swing, which are all limited field events leading up to the season-ending race to the CME Globe, and that doesn't play until November. So there's going to be a lot of young women after July looking for a place to play golf. It does assure the Marathon Classic will once again host top names in women's golf, plus the best young players will be trying to assure their tour cards for next year. The best women golfers have a tight schedule in July and August. After Toledo, they head to Chicago for the International Crown, then fly across the Atlantic for the Ricoh Women's British Open at Woburn outside of London, England. And in addition to tournaments around here, we've got a new tournament in Ann Arbor, Michigan up the road. So, but it's going to be a shorter season. It's going to make it more difficult for the younger players to get into fields and keep their cards for 2017. The Olympics is just creating a real problem, not only for the men, but also for the ladies' scheduling as well, Carlos.
People should stop complaining. This is just once every 4 years, so it's okay. It's okay.
We don't need it. We don't need it, Carlos. We don't need it.
No, I am all for it, so I am on the other side. Anyway, you know, that bunker that was the setting of one of the most famous shots in golf could soon become an oversized
bunker. I know that bunker. I've seen that shot a million times.
The owners of Glen Abbey Golf Club have filed a request to have the course bulldozed and turned into a commercial residential development that would include 3,000 homes in Oakville, Ontario. But despite this request by the company's owner, Clubland Corp., CEO Rai Sahi says that golf balls will still be flying at the Jack Nicklaus Design Golf Course for quite some time yet, including next year's Canadian Open. And that this is very preliminary and it could be within 5 or 10 years. But any redevelopment could also be delayed by opposition from the town of Oakville and residents. Glen Abbey may not be the best golf course in Canada, but it certainly is one of the best known. In addition to hosting 27 Canadian Open tournaments, it gets international notice every time television airs that famous Tiger Woods magical 213-yard shot out of a bunker on the 18th hole cross water and landed near the pin, allowing him to win that 2000 Open. Glen Abbey isn't just a golf course, though. It's the home to Golf Canada and the Canadian Golf Hall of Fame and Museum. Redevelopment plans for Glen Abbey have been rumored for some time, and Clubland's proposal to turn its Highland Gate Golf Club in Aurora, Ontario, into houses last year only filled the tank. While this could be This could mean the end of one of Canada's most famous golf courses and relocation of the sports museum and governing body. It may also say more about the tenuous state of golf. Glen Abbey is on prime land and is in a fast-growing region, so the plans could be more a product of profit than anything else. But with golf courses being redeveloped across the country, also there are plans to turn two other Oakville golf courses into housing projects. Fred, it may also indicate that the game isn't as healthy as it was once.
Yeah, it's just another casualty, Carlos. Real estate value is the ground's worth a lot more with condos and strip malls and gas stations on it than the golf course. So, hey, Carlos, here's a story for you. When you asked 16-year-old Colin Bowles what was it like to shoot around in the 50s, he asked to stop and think a minute and say, well, which one? He put together multiple scores in the 50s. His best ever came 2 months ago at Clear Fork Valley Golf Course, where he fired a 56. 56. 14 under par. He's 16 years old, Carlos. I don't know if you heard me. I didn't stutter. He's a sophomore in high school. While the layout isn't exactly the longest, it maxes out around 5,800 yards. It has small, firm greens, which gives the par 70 course, you know, that's what gives us a defense. I don't care if it's a short par 70. You still got to knock it close and make the putts. Bowles opened with six birdies and an eagle for a front nine 27, and he said, I didn't really hit any close shots in there on the front. It was mostly holding those 10-footers that you have to make. You make a lot of those 10-footers for birdies and eagles, right, Carlos? His ball striking improved on the back nine, plus he hold two chip-ins. Chip-ins always help. Plus they keep your putts per green average down. Everything was going my way. It ended at 14 under 56 total. This kid does not graduate from high school until the spring of 2017, but he's already on several college golf coaches' radar. The scouting report on Bowles, good length, an expert short game, and solid on the greens. He already has one college offer on the table from West Virginia, and he has taken unofficial visits to Duke, Florida State, with possible future trips to Auburn, Georgia Tech, and South Carolina. He has received letters from Oklahoma State and Arizona State, among others. At the moment, Bowles says his top choice is Florida State. Bigger schools began to notice Bowles when he qualified for match play, the USGA Junior Match Play at the 2014 tournament, and faced off against Annie Zhang in the round of 64. There were a lot of college coaches following at the Junior Am, and I think that's pretty much when they started following me a little bit. I got a bunch of letters soon after that. It was overwhelming. I didn't expect the letters to come that quick. This kid attends high school online, Carlos, 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. daily. That allows him to get out to the course to practice on the range in the afternoons. He plans to play in some more AJGA events this next couple years. He's played in five previous AJGA events and had a couple of high finishes, which earned him full eligibility. So he plans on playing five or six tournaments a year going forward. So, Carlos, remember his name, Colin Bowles, B-O-W-L-E-S. With the way the PGA Tour winners keep getting younger and younger, we may see this kid start winning on tour sooner than later.
I hope, NCAA doesn't start, prohibiting those visits or something. I don't know. They might come with something like that. But anyway, to finalize our Par 5 news, I have something about Jordan Spieth, something that, little Bowles might be trying to achieve when he grows a little bit more. Everybody's trying to cash in on him, Jordan Spieth. A flurry of gambling ads that appeared on social media have been censored by the Advertising Standards Authority for featuring an image of someone under the age of 25. Posts by Coral, Bet365, and ToteSport were all investigated by the ASA as part of wider ongoing work to ensure gambling ads stick to strict rules designed to protect
people. There's betting in golf, Carlos? There's betting in golf? I am aghast.
Oh, my God. I never heard of it. But anyway, it is. And all three betting sites included an image of 22-year-old professional golfer Jordan Spieth, which the ASA said was irresponsible and breached the Committee of Advertising Practice, the CAP code, which says that no one who is or looks to be, well, that's difficult, looks to be under 25 can be Fisher playing a significant role in marketing communications other than on gambling operators' own website. The gambling companies all defended the tweets and said they were merely, you know, editorial content. The ASA disagreed and said Spieth played a significant role in the post, which were not in places where a bet could be placed on channels such as a Brent site. All three of the ads must not appear again in their current form, and as a result of the ASA's monitoring, CAP will be updating its advice to advertisers, and the regulator said it will be communicating to the sector for the ramifications of these rulings.
That wraps up the Par 5 News presented by United Golf Network. United Golf Network wants every golfer to enjoy the game more and have the opportunity to earn money while doing it. They offer a top line of golf products, including popular name brands like Nike, Wilson, Greg Norman, Ashworth, TaylorMade, Adidas, and Where to Win. Everything a golfer needs, clubs, balls, bags, shoes, apparel, and accessories, are available with discounts for huge savings. United Golf Network not only has an excellent product line, they also offer every golf nut the chance to earn commissions on product through their director's program. Get your buddies involved, sell them some product, make a few bucks on the side. United Golf Network provides instant and free access to Global Affinity, which offers discounted travel. Another free perk is membership to My Golf in U.S., which offers discounted rounds of golf in 16 states and 3 Canadian provinces. Visit UnitedGolfNetwork.com today. Check out the products, discounts, and their opportunity, Carlos.
We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we have our VIG, very important guest of the week, Jay Townsend.
Thank you for listening to the Back 9 Report presented by eDraft.com. We'll be right back. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for the very important guest, the VIG of the week. His name is Jay Townsend. He was born in Michigan. He grew up, yeah, Fred, in Ohio. In Ohio, yes. He
Everybody good comes from Ohio, Carlos.
He played for the University of Florida and traveled. You know, he didn't play for OSU, so he played for the University of Florida. He traveled the world playing golf on the European Tour for 14 years. He has been an on-course golf announcer for the last 15 years for European Tour Productions and the Golf Channel. So, Fred, tell us a little bit about this interview with our PIG.
Yeah, I've always enjoyed listening to Jay Townsend when he's doing the European Tour broadcast. And as you mentioned, he's been covering the European Tour for 14 years as an on-course announcer. He's an expert on all things concerned about the European Tour. And I had a chance to ask him several questions about the current state of affairs over there. So go ahead and roll the tape, Carlos.
We are talking with Jay Townsend today on Back 9 Report. He is an announcer, on-course announcer on European Tour events, has been for several years. Not too many people know, Jay was born in Michigan, in Flint, Michigan, grew up in Chagrin Falls, Ohio, played golf at the University of Florida, and he's resided down there ever since. He did play, had a professional career, played in 214 events over a 14-year span on the European Tour. And Jay, you've been over there on the European Tour and broadcasting now for over 15 years. We can hear your dulcet tones and accurate analysis on the Golf Channel. You've got a pretty good gig. You get to travel all over Europe and the world to cover golf tournaments at some of the best international resorts and destinations. How did you happen to gravitate to European Tour coverage and not work here in the States?
Well, I think it was a natural progression because I played over in Europe from 85 to 98. So obviously that's kind of where my knowledge base is located. I was asked while I was still playing to broadcast the 99 Ryder Cup at Brookline for BBC Radio 5. And I did some other stuff while I was still playing earlier on than 99. And I knew that I wanted to broadcast when I was done playing. And then it just kind of grew. I started with European Tour Productions, which is the production that the Golf Channel takes in 2004 at the Irish Open. And it just kind of grew from there. And it's a lot of fun. I enjoyed playing over there. I enjoyed the learning the different cultures and everything, traveling around the world, as you said. And I still enjoy it. I think sometimes now the travel at my age of 53 gets a little bit tiresome. But all in all, you know, I really enjoy it. It's a lot of fun. I go to some amazing places. The last week of November, I'll be down in a pretty rural part of South Africa and do a little bit of golf broadcasting, go into the game parks in the morning, that type of stuff. So there are some pretty special weeks.
You've been around the European Tour since 1985. So what are maybe some of the biggest changes you've seen in the European Tour over the past 5 to 7 years?
I think in the most recent times, it's gotten a little bit more businesslike. I think the big change took place more in the late 90s and early 2000s, where it went from a really close-knit community like it was when I played to more of a U.S. tour type of business thing. Back when I played, there were a bunch of us. We used to travel with tennis rackets in our golf bags, and you know, we'd play tennis at the hotel and then have a late dinner and that type of thing. There was a lot more of that type of activity and camaraderie than there is now. There's still a lot of camaraderie on the European Tour, but it has changed the whole player interaction. It's much closer than it is here in the States, but it's not what it was back when I was playing, that's for sure.
As a European Tour expert, the main question every American golf fan wants to know is, why in the world does the Europeans continually beat the U.S. in the Ryder Cup?
Well, everyone asks that question, not always to me, and I actually have the answer to that, and I'm pretty sure that I'm right. You see, on paper, both sides are very equal. I mean, there's not a clear-cut favorite. Maybe this coming one in America is going to be a little bit favored. We have a lot of really good young players. Not that Europe doesn't, but I think there's a little bit of changing on the power structure right now. But typically, over the last 10 matches, it's been very even. And you have the Americans who want to win. I mean, they want to win badly. And the Europeans want to win badly. But there's one difference. The Europeans have a passion to win. I think the Americans want to win. The Europeans feel like they have to win. They feel like, you know, losing is not an option. And I think if you have someone that wants something and someone else that has passion for it, that is unrivaled, the passion is going to win. And that's what it comes down to. It only comes down to their heart and soul. They feel like the kind of a little bit of a chip on their shoulder, because everyone says that the U.S. Tour is the best tour and everything, and it's pretty hard to argue against that. And the Europeans just feel like they want to go out there and kick the Americans' butts and prove that, hey, we're just as good as you guys are, if not better.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good take. The Americans feel they have to win, and that puts the pressure back on them every time. I think you're exactly right about that. Hey, Chubby Chandler had some fairly harsh comments for the decision to grant Rory McIlroy a medical exemption in the Race to Dubai this year. New European Tour CEO Keith Pelley also announced that the Euro Tour would not sanction the 2016 WGC Bridgestone due to a conflict with a European Tour event there in France. What is your take on the new European Tour CEO, Keith Pelley, and his first decisions in office?
Well, I've had very little interaction with Keith, but I have had a lot of reaction from the players, both committee members and rank-and-file players, and it's all been super positive. So I think that Keith has been a great hire by the European Tour board. And you touched on a couple of different subjects. First of all, the McIlroy thing. When it happened, I actually thought, you know, that's a pretty good thing. He was injured. He was obviously injured. He wasn't, wasn't trying to just shirk his events or something like that. And I thought, okay, that's a good move. And then some other stuff has come up. Oosthuizen had to withdraw from a couple of events because of the injury that made him withdraw from the FedEx Cup Coca-Cola Championship in Atlanta. And I think the McIlroy thing kind of opened the door for other people to use the same injury thing to get into the race to Dubai. So in hindsight, I don't think it was the right ruling. I don't know if they'll do it again. It certainly seemed like it at the time that, okay, that's a good move. Because obviously you always want McIlroy in the field. I mean, he is a phenomenal player. Certainly the most talented player in the world. So I think that that was the right thing. As far as the French Open and the Bridgestone, I don't think Keith Pelley really had a choice. Number one, it's a huge event for the European Tour, the French Open. It's also their 100th anniversary on that date. That date has not changed. It was the WGC that changed their date to accommodate the Olympics. So I think Keith did the right thing. I really do. I think he's got to, you know, he's got to think about the European Tour. That's his job. That's his baby. And I don't think anybody that, you know, really understands the history behind the French Open and what's going on over there would argue that Keith didn't do the right thing.
Yeah, Pelley's also going to be dealing with some other issues. Number one, we're seeing Andy Sullivan won three times in the European Tour this year, and he's not, you know, he's still outside the top 10 in the race to Dubai heading into the final series this week. So there seems to be a big disparity in tournaments, almost like a minor league and a major league for the European Tour. And top players all earn their race to Dubai ranking in the bigger U.S. events, the majors, the WGCs. How does Pelley deal with this and kind of bring some uniformity to the European Tour and get more of those big names to play in some of those other European Tour events?
Well, I hadn't really thought about that, but it's interesting that you bring that up. I mean, there's a lot of different ways that you could fix that. One of them would be have it not be a monetary-based schedule and have it become more points-based. Obviously, you can't have a couple of tournaments that Andy won were in South Africa, and I think most Americans, you know, probably don't pay attention to exchange rate, but for the most part, the European Tour works in either euros or pounds. I know in the Golf Channel broadcast, they convert things to dollars on their graphics, but the bottom line is right now it's 21 or 22 South African rand to the British pound. So it's very difficult for a tournament sponsor in South Africa to match a purse in Europe, like the French Open, which is, say, you know, 5 million euros or $7 million, whatever it might be. So financially, that's just not possible to have less you know, less variance in the size of the purse. And you're right, there are some huge variances, especially when you take in the WGCs and the majors that are included in the European Tour money list. That really does skew things, and I think you bring up a good point. So a points-based system would be one way to fight that, and certainly probably something that Keith will eventually, you know, take on. I'm not sure if that's number one in his priority list. He hasn't really shared that with me, to be honest with you. But Keith did come in and say, you know, one of the big things that he's kind of, you know, made promises about, from my understanding, is that they will start playing for a lot more money. And Keith has a TV background, and TV is the only way that you're going to increase purses. Let's face it, sponsors put up money for exposure. Exposure comes from television. So I'm sure that TV will have a large part in how he plans to grow the European Tour.
Yeah, I noticed that too when I was reading his bio and background when they hired him, that he came out of TV, and that's exactly what they have to do. They got to promote that worldwide thing and really work together with South Africans, with the Australians, with the Asians, to really promote that worldwide tour thing. Hey, one more topic I want to touch on with you. You've seen a lot of young Americans come over there, earn enough world golf ranking points to find their way back to the PGA Tour. Brooks Koepka is the latest. He won over there. He has won on the U.S. Tour now, just renounced his European Tour membership for next year. You know, again, it's kind of this thing. has the European Tour kind of been reduced more to a developmental tour for the PGA Tour? And can Pelle turn this thing around?
I don't think it's a developmental tour, not in any way. And I think Keith can turn it around. Obviously, the way to turn it around is through larger purses to get more player retention. Now, the discussion is how do you do that? Obviously, I've already touched on TV. Do you take away appearance money and put that money in the purse? That's been a chicken and the egg discussion for 30 years in Europe. I mean, you know, can you do that? And I think that that's something that they're going to have to look at. I don't know the answer to that. That's way above my pay grade. I think Brooks really did himself well. He went over there, played the Challenge Tour. He earned his way onto the European Tour via the Challenge Tour, which is Europe's version of the web.com. Peter Uihlein came over before Brooks, he hasn't quite progressed as quickly, but certainly Peter's on the cusp of getting in, you know, where he wants to be and winning in Europe and that type of thing. And I think that unless you're a superstar, it's very difficult to play enough events on both sides of the Atlantic, even though you have those seven events, the four majors and the three WGCs in the States. That gets you seven, but you have to play 13. And beyond the superstars who are traveling in their own private jets and that type of thing, we're not talking about jet share and that type of thing. We're talking about their own planes that have beds in them and they can rest, that type of thing. And guys like McIlroy and although Tiger never took membership, Tiger. We're talking about that type of a level to be able to do it and do it successfully. I mean, you look at a guy like Paul Casey, who was a member on both sides and then gave up his European Tour membership and concentrated on playing in the States. And Casey's a wonderful player. But I think it was just a little bit too much, a little bit overwhelming, and he started to get his form and really had a good year this year playing only in the States. And then even though it's a Ryder Cup year coming up, he said, you know what, I need to look at what's best long-term for myself and my family, and I'm just going to concentrate on playing in the States. I think it's extremely difficult beyond the top, seven, eight players in the world to be able to play on both sides of the Atlantic. And Justin Rose, who won in Hong Kong last week, I think he's kind of, right there where it's very difficult. The great players make it seem doable, but unless you're in that really top echelon of players, it's not doable. It's just too tough.
Yeah, I've said that for years, that one of the hardest things on pro golfers is traveling around the world. And you can see it. Tiger never really wanted to travel outside the United States very much, unless it was at the end of the season. They went out and made a couple appearances to build up Nike and those kind of things. And guys to do it in the middle of the season like they want, like Rory tries to do, to go back and play in the Irish and some of the different things, it's tough to do. Well, listen, we've been talking to Jay Townsend, who does European Tour broadcasts. You can hear him on the Golf Channel. Jay, we really appreciate you taking a few minutes to talk to us today and look forward to your coverage in the future.
Thank you very much for having me, and I enjoy it. Hope we touch on some good subjects.
Thanks, Jay.
Well, there you have it. It was Jay Townsend. He touched on all the subjects. I think that he didn't touch on anything there from the European Tour. Great insight, Fred, there. I think that with what Kieran gave us on the chip shot last week and this, I think we have the European Tour covered.
Yeah, you know what? As I was talking to him, that's exactly why I kind of used Kieran's model. And I had actually written an article about the European Tour before Kieran, and I had those same points in it. Jay just reinforced that the things that the European Tour are dealing with, they need to find some better sponsors, they need to build some of these lesser tournaments up. And like Kieran said, they might even cut a few away, and really key on some main big tournaments to get those guys to come over there and play. So they've got some issues, but they still have a strong base. So I think they're going to be viable, and it's always fun to see who comes. We got Matt Fitzgerald. We've seen some good young players coming out of there and coming over here. Emiliano Grillo now is the latest one. So it's always interesting to watch and see who's rising to the top.
We'll see what happens. Hey, now it's time for our chip shot. Every week we're going to be bringing you a different story, a different set of view. And this week we have Matt Saturnus, who would be talking about equipment. So, Fred, talk to us about Matt, who will be taking the chip shot this week.
Yeah, Matt Saturnus is the co-founder of PluggedInGolf.com. He's a golf instructor, a club fitter, and a writer living in northwest suburbs of Chicago. He's also a contributor for my NWO Golf Links magazine. Carlos, I've gotten to know Matt a little bit. And I asked him if he wanted to submit an article or a piece about equipment. He's kind of going to be our go-to equipment guy for Back of Nine Reports. So he did that, and go ahead and roll that, and we'll hear what Matt has to say about the latest technology and equipment coming down the road.
Hi, this is Matt Saturnus from PluggedInGolf.com, and I'm here to talk to you about some of the best new golf equipment. For players looking to get a little more distance off the tee, there are lots of new driver options this fall. But two of the best are from Callaway. The first is the Great Big Bertha driver, and this is the one that's going to have the appeal to the broadest range of players. It's very forgiving, face is very hot, and it's got nice adjustability with a sliding weight around the back edge that helps to either correct a slice or a hook or promote a draw or a fade. It also has adjustability at the hosel that's going to allow you to add or decrease loft, change the face angle, and change the lie angle. For better players, or players who simply want to be on the cutting edge of technology, Callaway offers the Big Bertha Alpha 816 Double Black Diamond driver. Now this driver, what sets it apart is the gravity core technology. Think of the gravity core as almost like a battery of weight. It's very heavy on one end and very light on the other. And this gravity core can be put into any one of four positions to change both the directional bias, either draw or fade, as well as the launch and spin conditions. This weight also changes the feel very dramatically. So if you pick up the driver and try it and don't like the feel of it, you can set that weight in a different position and really change the way the club feels. The only caveat is this is for little better players. You have to be a little more precise in terms of how you strike the ball. Now switching to the other end of the game, the short game, Ping has two new clubs that are going to help you get up and down a little more often. The first is the Catch Mid Putter. Now Ping released the original Catch a couple seasons back and had great success. It's a very big mallet, very, very forgiving, with Ping's True Roll face technology, which is the most impactful putter face technology on the market. What the Catch Mid is a putter about half the size, so it looks and feels much more like a traditional putter for players who prefer that, but it still has a lot of forgiveness, and it still has that True Roll face technology, so it's a really great putter to help make sure those long putts don't turn into three putts to make sure that you stay a little truer on those short putts as well. Now, the other club that Ping has just released is an addition to their Glide Wedge series, and it's the Glide ES. ES stands for iSole, as in the Ping i2 wedge. And what's different about it is it has a scalloped sole, a high toe, and a thinner hosel. And these three features do help it in lots of facets of the short game. It's a very versatile wedge, good for pitching, chipping. But where it really shines is in the bunker. That thinner hosel and the scalloped sole allow it to move through the sand very, very easily and really help you get up and down much more easily compared to a traditional wedge. Now, for players who really struggle in bunkers and just absolutely are afraid of them and can't get out of them, the club they're going to want to check out is the Cleveland Smart Sole 2.0 wedge. There are two wedges in this lineup. One's a chipper for players who have the chipping yips or just struggle with that. That's a good club, but the sand wedge is fantastic. It has a massive sole, lots of bounce, and it simply will not allow you to leave the ball in the bunker. Whether it's a good lie, a bad lie, dry sand, wet sand, whether you're steep, shallow, have a lot of speed into the ball, just a little bit, no matter what you do, this club will easily throw the ball out of the bunker and onto the green. It's a nice high trajectory. So whether you're looking to add distance off the tee, get out of the bunker, or just make more putts, There are lots of new equipment options this fall for you to check out.
And that was Matt Saturnus with talking to us about equipment. And he talked, Fred, about a lot of things there and all that. And now on the practice range, we're going to be expanding on the equipment subject. And, you know, with the Christmas shopping rapidly approaching, he talked about all this technology, all this thing that maybe some people would say, I would need like a degree for this. Is this all necessary for buying new gloves? I mean, how often should you change them? What's your take on it?
Well, Carlos, you're going to have to bear with me for a moment. I'm going to go on one of my little rants here. And I know you've got some different thoughts, too. So, you know, I'm forced to use technology all day, every day. I'm constantly amazed, you know, at all the things that surround me that an old duffer like me, I can accept new apps, smartphones, tablets, et cetera, et cetera. But I sometimes wonder, is all of the technology really necessary to enjoy golf too? The short answer is no. You can still just grab some old sticks, head to the course, tee up your old Balata ball if you want, and play a little golf. You know, every golfer strives to improve and post lower scores. Has everyone forgotten, though, that the game is about enjoyment, being in the sunshine, getting exercise, and enjoying the company of the other people in your foursome? We are a nation that is obsessed with performance and improvement. That's exactly why many people stay away from golf in the first place. They can't immediately be proficient at the game, and so they don't even try. The fact also is, however, for the serious golfer, things like TrackMan, adjustable drivers, and all that techno mumbo jumbo has drawn them in like a moth to the flame. So back to my original question. Is it really necessary when buying new clubs? The short answer is for the average golfer, it just doesn't matter. An inexpensive set of clubs with a couple of hybrids will be sufficient for most golfers to enjoy the game. For the serious golfer, however, he needs bigger, better, longer, more forgiving, adjustable, swing speed, ball speed, launch angle, spin rate, flex point, COI, torque, etc., to assure that he is getting the maximum from his equipment and his game. My point here is a big one. Average golfer versus serious golfer. That's a very big distinction. When was the last time you bought new equipment, Carlos? Why did you buy what you bought? Did you get a pro fitting? Did you look at your launch angle, ball speed, and spin rate? If technology turns you on and you feel you need to know every number that applies to your swing, then by all means, get a proper fitting and buy the appropriate clubs. But I hope prospective golfers don't shy away from the game because they're too terrified to even go purchase a set of clubs and start playing the game, Carlos.
You know, I think you're going to be surprised at my take on this. You know, to me, as avid golfers and equipment junkies, I am sure that most club golfers out there feel easily persuaded and buy and feel profound guilt for not being the first to purchase and proudly own all of the new technology on the market today. You know, they are hornswoggled by the advertisers or tempted by a club maker's new adjustable face, lower center of gravity, reduced spin, longer carries, lighter shaft, this more penetrating flight, wider club head for better contrast, higher MOI, COR, or similar spacecraft technology on the market today, and make them feel like losers for not having the latest and greatest. And I purposely, I'm not going to mention golf balls because they are replaced after just a few holes or every shot in some cases, depending on your slice like mine. But anyway, here's my advice. You know, stop spending your money on new equipment. Get fit with the new equipment, with the equipment you have, and spend like $40 a month on a range membership. Also, find an instructor that doesn't charge you an arm and a leg for a recurring package of lessons and who gives you reachable goals, practice deals, and routine. You know, Mr. Fred Alvader comes to mind, so email him. Anyway, set up a practice schedule within your limited free time and dig it out of the dirt. Week one golf look a month. There's, you know, this 10,000-hour rule in all professions and trades. So if you want to get good at doing something, You have to learn the correct way to do it. Then practice that learned motion over and over again. I know golfers who have dropped 30 strokes in 3 years just by having a focused practice routine, spending a half hour or more 4 or 5 days a week working on fundamentals, chipping, and pitching from inside 100 yards. Also, don't waste your entire bucket of balls pounding driver after driver on the range, you know, and hit the putting green for 40 to 15% of your practice time. You know, if Luke Donald comes to you, he could take any of your foursome bag of clubs and beat you handily with them, so you don't need any other. This will sound weird coming from somebody like me, who's different to Fred. I am an all-out technology guy. And in golf, technology changes to make more money, but handicaps stay the same because we want to buy a better game instead of putting in the time. Getting better is easy if you are willing to endure the pain to get there. The golf swing is not free, nor it can be purchased, but it must be earned. Fred, I think that is what Mr. Hogan meant by digging it out of the dirt. Sorry about that.
Yeah, you're exactly right, Carlos. You know, put a little more time in practice. Don't worry so much about the latest, greatest $400 driver. Go hit some balls on the range, you know, a few times and see if that doesn't help.
Yep. So any final thoughts before we close our show today?
No, I'm good. I thought we had hit a lot of subjects and really enjoyed listening to Jay Townsend and the thoughts on equipment from Matt Saturnus.
Well, Back Niners, that wraps up another week of the Back Nine Report presented by eDraft.com. It's always our pleasure to bring you the latest on the world of golf. Thank you for listening to us. Special thanks to our VIG, very important guest of the week, Jay Townsend, and our this week's Chip Shot contributor, Matt Saturnus. Don't forget to join us again next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time here on Block Talk Radio, and also through TuneIn or download our show on iTunes. If you haven't done so, follow the show. Our Twitter ID is at Back9Report with the number 9 in the middle. My name is Carlos Torres, along with Fred Alvader. We wish you to be happy, be blessed, and enjoy the great game of golf. Happy golfing, everybody.
Good night, everybody.